All right, welcome into 101 with Joe O'Donnell, episode numero seis. See, my Spanish after all these years, not so rusty. I am Joe O'Donnell, glad to have you with me here today. Episode six, presented by Explore Minnesota. Explore Minnesota is your source for seasonal travel ideas, events, and places to stay. Winter fishing, cozy resorts, outdoor activities, and family togetherness. Create getaways that can be found only in Minnesota. Plan your True North adventures at exploreminnesota.com. All right, should be a fun episode. I'll be joined by Michael Russo from The Athletic Minnesota in just a couple of minutes to talk a lot of Minnesota Wild stuff, as well as his feature article on what the 2021 NHL season might look like. And again, he'll give you some info in our interview coming up in just a few minutes on how you can subscribe to The Athletic, which certainly gives you all kinds of sports content, podcasts, written stories, etc., on a daily basis. So Michael Russo from The Athletic, at Russo Hockey on Twitter, will be my guest coming up here in just a few minutes. Been a while since the last podcast. My apologies there. And looking to get it more regularly going, moving along. Got to stop being so lazy. Got to start lining up some more guests and give you the content you're craving, folks. Again, don't forget to follow, subscribe, like, all those things, so that you can get the podcast as soon as it drops, and we'll continue to grow this thing organically, my friends. Speaking of the 2021 season, the American Hockey League Board of Governors recently voted to set the new tentative start date to February 5th. Not a shock to many of us within the industry, given that December was right around the corner, as we're about to hit November here, and December 4th just doesn't seem that realistic, given everything we know about the COVID pandemic and where we're at as a society. And so we'll see what shapes up now for the American Hockey League. Lots of work to be done over the next few weeks. My hope is a schedule gets released sometime in December, puck drops in February, some markets limited fans, maybe some markets opt out. You've seen a lot of speculation if you've been reading up on the American Hockey League and the rest of the minor leagues like the ECHL and the SPHL, and even the NHL to some extent, things that are leaked out or opinions and takes and scenarios from those in the industry, from some of the insiders. So sometimes it's hard to sift through it, know what to believe, what not to. And I think really, just like we've been essentially saying and living all day by day since March, I think it'll just continue to be that case where as new information arises, as things are confirmed, we'll bring them to you on iowawild.com and all of our social media sites. And we just hope that once something's announced, we don't have to push back on it or tweak it at all, because as many of you know, it can be frustrating at times waiting for the American Hockey League to restart. Crazy to think it'll be about 11 months from the time things were halted last season to getting back up and running in 2021. But let's just hope February 5th remains the date. That's a Friday. I'd love nothing more to be up in the broadcast booth at Wells Fargo Arena bringing you Iowa Wild hockey on February 5th against a to-be-determined opponent, of course. So AHL continues to work as a group, the Return to Play Committee, to make sure that they put safety protocols in place and sort of sort through all the information to get a safe and hopefully somewhat prompt return to the ice for the American Hockey League moving forward. All right, before we go to Michael Russo, my guest today here on 101 with Joe O'Donnell, again presented by Explore Minnesota, I want to spend a couple of minutes talking about the greatest broadcaster in hockey history, in my opinion, one of the greatest broadcasters in any sports realm, and that's Mike Doc Emrick. Just retiring recently, announcing that he is done calling hockey games for NBC Sports, certainly was, at least for myself, sort of emotional. I mean, if you watch that five-minute or so piece that NBC put out right after the announcement that Doc was going to retire, my gosh, it was a little hard for me to watch, to be quite honest. He has been an influence of mine for a long time, even somewhat subconsciously. And what I mean by that is, you know, you listen to Doc for so long, you watch him call games, you pick things up as a broadcaster that maybe you wouldn't have. You know, I don't sit there and say, let me hear the way Doc calls a game and jot some stuff down and take some of those phrases or his verbiage or whatever. But just the way he handled himself in the booth, the cadence, the personality, the stats, the research, the info, you knew he was prepared. A couple people have have just talked about the way he called some of the most crazed action in a given game, the frantic pace that can happen throughout a hockey game, and he just calls it with such excitement and intensity and calls it so well. You know, he's the best, in my opinion, and off the ice, just an unbelievable person. You know, I had the pleasure of talking with him on a couple of occasions, having met him before. I shared a story on Twitter that 140 characters or whatever it is on Twitter certainly doesn't do it justice. But Doc Emmerich, once upon a time, this is like 2002-ish, I'm trying to get in the broadcasting business. I'm working at SMG Corporate in Center City, Philadelphia, you know, trying to get a job just out of college. And I had Doc Emmerich through a mutual friend, a mentor of mine, and Bruce Scoop Cooper, get my stuff to Doc, my demo tape, my air check CD, whatever you want to call it at the time. It was probably a compact disc, a CD. And he called my work line at SMG. I had stepped out for lunch, unfortunately. He left me a message on my work line, which, gosh darn it, I should have saved. I didn't. Probably saved it for a bit, but I didn't record it onto something else or keep it, which is definitely a regret right now. But he spent probably, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 minutes on there critiquing my tape, giving me advice, giving me little nuggets that the great Gene Hart had passed along, the longtime Flyers broadcaster who has since passed away. But, you know, to listen to Doc Emmerich break down my very, very average at best demo tape that probably just had college hockey on it, maybe a little bit of pro play-by-play from a press box in Philadelphia or something. To listen to him put in that time and effort and treat me like, you know, I was an up-and-coming broadcaster, like I, you know, had a chance in this business, and to listen to it and to give me his thoughts, and it just meant a lot, to be honest. And, you know, you can't put a price on that type of humanity, just how personable he was. I was getting ready to call the ECHL All-Star Game in 2007. I never called an All-Star Game before, and Doc had called plenty of them. And I reached out to him and just asked him for his opinion on, you know, what should I look for? How should I prepare? Just the fact that in an All-Star Game, you got to call everything right down the middle. You got to have excitement, whether the Eastern Conference scores or the Western Conference scores. And just the fact he would take some time out of his day for me to go through that, to tell me a little bit about his experience in All-Star Games and how to handle it and prepare. Again, just another example of him being an absolute pro. 47 seasons calling professional hockey for Mike Doc Emmerich, 45 game sevens, 6 Olympic games, over a dozen NHL All-Star games, 22 times he worked the Stanley Cup Finals. The best in the business for hockey, the best in the business for my money in any sport, Doc Emmerich, between, the way he handled himself on the air and off the air. It was never about himself. It was always about the analyst that he was working with. It was always about growing the game. It was always about just having fun in the booth, but yet being professional, prepared, and nobody had the amount of verbiage that Doc Emmerich did. To think that you could knife a puck, that you could twist a shot or a pass, waffle board down a chance, his iconic big drive, you know, when somebody fires a slap shot, I mean, it's just that unbelievable. And I'm glad to have been influenced by him, to say the least. You know, there's times if you hear me calling an Iowa Wild game and you hear 100 seconds to go in the third period, I took that from Doc Emmerich, starting a period and saying there's no carryover penalties or power plays for either side. That's a Doc Emmerich line. I'm not ashamed to admit it. Again, it wasn't so much consciously. When I do listen to other broadcasters, of course, if you hear the way something's described, you're going to want to take it, maybe use it. But Doc was just influential in so many ways for so many broadcasters. My stories are not, you know, exclusive to me. There are tons of young broadcasters and sports writers and journalists and communications majors that he has touched. And it's just an absolutely awesome feeling to know that I just, you know, could follow in his footsteps in just the slightest way and be influenced by him. And I think I say this not just for myself, but everybody in the hockey world. Thank you, Doc Emmerich, for all you've meant to the sport of hockey. You helped grow the game, and you are certainly the aspiration for a lot of broadcasters like myself. All right, quick message from Anchor.fm. And then Michael Russo from The Athletic to join me here. It's one-on-one with Joe O'Donnell.
My guest today for one-on-one with Joe O'Donnell is none other than Michael Russo, at Russo Hockey on Twitter, covering the NHL and the Minnesota Wild for The Athletic Minnesota. Michael, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. I'm ready to get back to covering some actual hockey games in person, but I don't know when that's going to be able to happen.
What's it like being interviewed for somebody like yourself that interviews so many people?
You know, it's funny. This is I did the Columbus Blue Jackets play-by-play guy, and now all of a sudden the Iowa Wild play-by-play guy. So maybe that's going to be my new role, is being on the other end of the microphone. But, you know, I enjoy it. I mean, it's a lot less prep, I'll tell you that. It's like today on my own podcast, I interviewed Ben Hankinson with Anthony LaPanta. And, you know, Ben, I know well. He's an agent and a former Gopher. But, you know, you can't just – as you know, Joe, I mean, you can't just it's not often you have Tim Army that just talks and talks and talks. You got to you got to pull out quotes from people sometimes. So you got to be well prepared. And so I do that a lot more than when I just sit down at my desk and chime in to chat with you.
What else makes a good interviewer or just an interview overall?
Listening. Honestly, I tell kids that all the time. I think a lot of people, when they're interviewing people, they just have sort of a canned, a bunch of questions written, and they read them almost verbatim and don't listen to the answers. And to me, the best interview is to have a conversation. And the only way to do that is if you listen to the answers. So usually what I do, especially when I do a podcast, like when I did the one with you in California, which, God, seems like so long ago.
Yeah.
Back when who knew when you were doing those games back in the beginning of last season, that where we would get to a point. And coincidentally, the Wild season ended in California as well, when you arranged the ability for me to do that podcast with Tim Army, I think at the same hotel, if I remember correctly. No. We did the R's in Anaheim. And so, you know, I think the big thing is that I usually just on a piece of paper will write sort of topics, and just it's kind of messy, and it's just more of things like to remind myself that I want to ask about this, I want to ask about that. But I think the best interviewers are the ones that just go in and try to shoot the breeze and disarm the person that they're interviewing.
Looking back on March with the Iowa Wild and the Minnesota Wild, both in San Jose, both literally days before our sports world and everything else, as we know, were flipped upside down.
Mm-hmm.
Are you shocked that there wasn't a single, as far as we know, no one tested positive? I mean, no one tested positive, but just the fact that the entire organization came out of that scot-free, for lack of a better term?
Well, I know I was nervous. I got home and all of a sudden you start, you know, thinking, all right, am I feeling well, or am I just got a, you know, a slight headache? You know, you start to worry because it's, you know, we weren't educated about this virus, and we were what we thought was sort of the beginning of a hotbed. And it really started in San Jose. And if you remember, it was the day after the Iowa, we started to hear about it the day the Iowa Wild played in San Jose, but it was the next day that the Santa Clara Health Department recommended, almost instructed, that the NHL, the San Jose Sharks, needed to cancel or postpone the Wild game. And I emailed the NHL, and they told me in like 5 seconds, nope, we're not doing it. And, you know, next thing we get down to Southern California, LA and Anaheim. And I remember thinking, I'm like, there's no way this is going to, first of all, stopping the season just completely seemed far-fetched. It never even dawned on me that something like that could happen. But the other thing that I remember thinking was that they'll never get to a point where they play games without fans. Who knew that we would get to a point where actually the return to play would be bubble cities in Canada. But it really was shocking. I'm glad, thank goodness, that nobody from the Minnesota Wild and the traveling party got sick, that nobody from the Iowa Wild and the traveling party got sick, because none of us knew that. I mean, if you remember, about a week later, Joe, it came out that at least one usher or security person working that game between the Iowa Wild and the San Jose Barracuda got sick. And I believe he also worked the next night against when the Wild played the Sharks. So, you know, thank goodness nothing happened.
Yeah. There was a Maple Leafs game in there too.
Yeah.
The Sharks as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, thank God nothing happened. And, you know, I was really worried also that I might have ruined the Iowa season because I did that podcast with Tim Army and it was as flat a performance as I think anybody has ever seen Iowa play. I did it on a game day. And I think that that Tim Army made it pretty clear that he's no longer doing game day podcasts for the rest of his life.
Yeah, creatures of habit. Yep. That was right after Kaapo Kähkönen had got hurt, and,
yeah.
And Iowa did not play well in that rematch game. And then a couple days later, everything was halted. How disappointed were you in the fact there, at least personally, that you couldn't, you know, attend the bubble Stanley Cup playoffs? That there weren't any really local beat writers. Yeah. Essentially allowed up there by the NHL. I know you probably have to be careful with some of this stuff, but just from a personal standpoint, how disappointing was that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was disappointing. It is not easy or fun covering games from my own couch. It's something I'm not used to, so that was difficult. You know, at first I didn't think it would bother me as much as it did once the game started going on. You know, at first I felt like, all right, nobody would be allowed in the bubble, so we wouldn't be able to interview people face-to-face. We wouldn't get that behind-the-scenes access that a lot of us grow accustomed to getting and being able to report to our readers. So I didn't think it was going to bother me. You know, if you went, you were watching games from in the arena, but you were still doing the same Zoom calls that those of us back here in Minnesota had to do. But then when the game started, I did get a little bummed. You know, you still want – you realize that when you're in the arena – and you know this, Joe, you get a much better sense of what's going on in the game. You know, you could see the benches, you could see behind the play, which as a play-by-play guy, from your standpoint, is extremely important. And I know from being really good friends with Anthony LaPanta that it was the most difficult thing that he's ever probably had to do in his life is, yep, is call games from a TV back here thousands of miles away. So it was disappointing for sure. I understand why the league was so strict. You know, at first, again, their only goal was to finish the season, and they really had to control the environment and keep as many people out as other than the people that were essential to make these games going on. So I get it. What I like to hear right now is that if next season does start in these quote-unquote modified bubbles in hub cities, which is very likely because I can't imagine that early January we're going to be able to have fans in the crowd yet, that broadcasters and media will be permitted to cover, you know, in some sort of social distancing capacity, you know, masking, all that type of stuff. But at least we'll be able to be there. And the hardest part of the job for my role, and I'm sure it's the same for you, Joe, is that ability in the morning skate, yeah, practices to shoot the breeze with players, to talk to the coaches face to face, to get, you know, stories that you can't just report on a pretty sterile, generic Zoom call where you only get one question.
Are there any positives out of these Zoom calls, whether it's NFL, Major League Baseball? I'm sure you've watched plenty of these new press conferences now. Anything you like at all, or do you just say, man, I just can't wait to get back to what I'm used to?
Well, let's put it this way. I can't wait to get back to what I'm used to, but I do think that we've learned a lot and teams have learned a lot. And one thing that I do like that I think that should continue is I don't know how essential it ever is again to rush down to the arena for a press conference. I mean, we could always, for a big press conference, do a Zoom call from our homes. You know, hopefully the conference call is a thing of the past. You know, in the past, if the Wild had just even signed Cam Talbot, it would just be a conference call with the GM and a conference call with Cam. Now we can do Zoom calls, and I hope that continues. But in terms of game day access, morning skates, post games, that stuff I hope is a thing of history that we have to just do Zoom calls where you get one question, you don't get follow-ups. As you know, Aaron Sickman and Megan Kogut, the two Wild PR people, are the best in the business. They do an incredible job with our Zoom calls of giving the beat writers the ability to ask follow-ups and things like that. But when it's, you know, the NHL running the show up in Edmonton, we weren't given that same ability, and it made it really, really difficult. You know, when the Wild were eliminated in Game 4 of the qualifying round, and you're only able to ask one question to Dean Evason or one question to either Zach Parise or Eric Staal, that makes life extremely difficult from a beat writer perspective.
On Twitter, @RussoHockey, Michael Russo covering the NHL for The Athletic Minnesota. How can our fans get more information on subscribing to The Athletic?
If you go to theathletic.com/straightfromthesource, that's one of my podcasts that I do, and that will get you in for a very cheap discount. In fact, I believe I'm going to type it while I'm talking. I think there it's $1 a month right now to get in. And now's a great time in the off season. A lot of stories to catch up on, but I highly, highly recommend people joining. I think if you are a hockey fan, you will absolutely love the coverage that we have, not just in Minnesota, but and all the local teams here, but throughout the United States, Canada, any team that you're a favorite, that's your favorite. We got a beat writer covering them, colleges in Europe, covering soccer, everything.
It was certainly a leap you and so many other writers took a few years ago. Yep. Now I remember it at the time pretty
stressful.
I was sort of surprised. Yeah, well, and you know, just surprised that this is the way the industry was going. And then I saw recently you tweeted, I think, on one of the anniversaries. Boy, what a great decision it was for so many people. And I will concur, The Athletic is a great source. I love that they filter things kind of into your news feed just for you.
Yeah, and what's really cool is, you know, as I mentioned, we cover hundreds of teams. But if you're not interested in the Indianapolis Colts or the New York Giants or the, Carolina Panthers, whatever. I don't know why I'm picking NFL teams. if you don't follow them on your feed, you don't get inundated with it. So you only follow what you care about. So it's really good. And I would have unbelievable professional jealousy if I had turned down this opportunity. It was a tough, tough decision. I mean, you know, a lot of people that went to The Athletic were coming from newspapers that were, by the way, Brennan Minnell just scored his second goal of the season in the second period for Minsk. That just came across my Twitter feed. I think a lot of people that came to The Athletic were coming from newspapers that were in turmoil, that were stressed, that were worried about their jobs or just lost a job. I was coming from the Star Tribune, which was extremely healthy, treated me like gold, and I absolutely loved every second that I worked there. So it was an extremely stressful decision. But I flew out to California, and I met with the two co-founders, Adam Hansman and Alex Mather, and they absolutely sold me on their vision. And everything that they said they were going to do, they've done. And what's amazing is that we have like 60 hockey writers. I was like the seventh, maybe the sixth or the seventh. And so now I look back on it, and I'm like, man, because I'm not a pretty courageous person. I don't know how I had the guts to actually do something like this. You know, I'm somebody that's had like two jobs in my life before coming to The Athletic at the Sun Sentinel and the Star Tribune. And so I'm not somebody that, you know, likes moving, likes changing, jobs unless it's made for me. And, thank goodness I do it. I highly recommend people subscribing.
You mentioned Minnell. Nice to see him back in the lineup if you're a Dynamo Minsk fan, I guess. Were you surprised by that news that he bolted for Europe?
Yeah, I am surprised just from the standpoint that this would have been a really good opportunity, I think, for him to make the team. At the time, he didn't know if Matt Dumbo would be traded or could still be traded. Greg Patterson's health is up in the air. I just thought this was a really good opportunity for him to make the team, being a right shot D. I just think it was a tad short-sighted of him. And the other thing is that, like, to me, if I was him, I would have looked at it like I was the one that was actually called up to play this year from a right shot D standpoint, not Louis Belpedio. So I would have looked at it like I'm ahead of him on the depth chart. I would think that he's ahead of Kalen Addison on the depth chart just based on age. So I just think he would have had the opportunity. But you know what? It's a shame he, at the end of October or end of September, had to come out of their lineup for Minsk because he was leading the league for points and defensemen. It seems to be going really, really well for him. I'm glad to see he's back in the lineup and racking up points again. He's a heck of a player. And even though I know that the organization wasn't extremely delighted that he left for the KHL, I think that the reality is that if you're a good player, you'll have an opportunity. And so Billy Guerin's never going to hold this against him. If he is good enough to play for the Minnesota Wild in the future, he will be allowed back with open arms.
Before I go too far down the Minnesota Wild rabbit hole with you, I want to circle back to the newspaper industry because it was something I jotted down to chat with you about. You know, it's been in decline for years. Subscriptions, I think, for the most part, have been down for years. Correct me if I'm wrong, but where do you come out on how the newspaper industry still helps large part of America or can be a service and where it's at?
Well, I think it's never been as important as it is right now because the point of local journalism especially is checks and balances. And that's what the newspapers do is watch, report on the local news like no other national news paper or news site can do. And I'm bringing in local television, local radio in this as well. And also, you know, the checks and balances of local governments that, again, you know, major outlets don't have the ability to do. You're not going to see the New York Times, the Washington Post, or the or CNN or Fox News be able to cover what's going on in the Minnesota Capitol as good as papers like the Star Tribune and the Pioneer Press. So I think they're essentially they're absolutely essential. I think there's a place for it all. I worry about the future just based on the fact that these newspapers really, like they've never done before, have to rely on subscribers, where because of the just downfall in advertising. I mean, especially in the middle of a pandemic where local businesses just don't have the funds to advertise in your local newspaper, and it just makes it awfully, awfully difficult. So I hope there's a future. I think there's room for us all. You know, again, to me, if you're going to want to read about the car accident down the street or the burglary or something like that, you need the newspapers to do that. If you want to, you know, read about the Gophers or local preps or the local sports teams, the newspapers still provide that. What The Athletic does is just give you, if you are a diehard sports fan, it just brings you into a story like the newspapers can't do, because we have no space constraints. We have no deadlines constraints. You know, that to me has been the best part of the move of The Athletic, is that if I want to let a story breathe, so to speak, and write a huge Sam Anna story like I did during the playoffs last year, or a huge Jerry Mayhew story, or a huge Brendan Minnell story, or Matt Barkowski, I don't have to keep it to 15 inches, 18 inches, a finite amount of space that can appear in the Star Tribune. I could let it breathe until I feel like I'm done with the story and I've told the story.
How much do you enjoy the Straight from the Source podcast, your KFan appearances, your TV work?
You know, to me, if I had ever just been a newspaper reporter, I would have probably been out of this business a long time ago. And that has nothing to do with my love for the newspapers, but you get bored with everything. And you know, I think that the multimedia allows me to expand out, have fun. I mean, you know, I think that all of us spend so much time, Joe, doing our jobs, that if you don't enjoy it, it's going to make for a miserable life. And that's what the multimedia allows me to do, is talk to people that's interesting. I mentioned I had Ben Hankinson on my podcast today, on my TalkNorth.com podcast. And that was just a great conversation. I enjoyed every minute of that 55 minutes talking to him about some of his clients like Big Buff and Ryan McDonough and Jake Gensel and Brock Besser and Al Stalock and you know, people that you also know from down there in Iowa, like Gustav Olofsson and Nate Prosser. I enjoyed it. My Straight from the Source podcast is also an interview show where I get to talk to a lot of different people, like you, when we were out in California. And to me, it's just, it makes for a fun, fun existence. And same thing with going on The Fan and here in Minnesota and Fox Sports North. So, as I think I've told you before, and I probably told you on my podcast that I did with you almost a year ago now, maybe exactly a year ago, is like, I wanted to be a broadcaster when I was a kid. I wanted to be a play-by-play guy. I used to pretend that I was a play-by-play guy, and somehow I became a sports writer. So what the podcasts and the radio and the TV allows me to do is sort of get back to maybe that true love that I had when I was a kid, and do a little bit of everything.
There are very few broadcasters as respected as Doc Emrick. Now, he only retired, but part of me felt like worse had happened, if you're catching my drift. It was just such an outpouring of respect and support around the hockey world. What stands out to you the most about, to me, one of the greatest broadcasters across any platform of all time?
He is genuinely – I know people say this and it becomes trite. When somebody retires, or as you know, or sadly when somebody passes, but he is truly one of the nicest human beings I've ever met. He is genuinely kind. He is genuinely wants to pay it forward to young broadcasters. I cannot even convey to you how many times a young broadcaster has come to me for advice, and I sit there and I'm like, why am I trying to give you advice? I'm not a broadcaster. Let me ask you about one of your heroes. Who is it? And they'll say Doc Emrick, and I'll reach out to him. He says, yeah, sure, give him my email address. A couple years ago, I was named Minnesota Sports Writer of the Year, and I was down at the – I can't remember what it's now called. It's NSMA. I can't remember what it used to be called. But anyway, I was down in Salisbury, North Carolina at the awards ceremony, and Doc Emrick was named the National Sportscaster of the Year. So this is, again, a Sports Writers and Sportscasters Association. and he's giving his speech in front of, you know, more than 1,000 people. And he's also being streamed live on the internet. And he live on the internet gave out his email address for any sports broadcaster that wanted advice or to send him quote unquote tapes. And I just thought, like, what a nice person. And it really, you know, I always try to help out young students that want to become sports writers. But you know, seeing a legend like him do that, it really made me appreciate what a good person he was. And it made me also realize, you know what, these emails that I get or these direct messages that I get that I sometimes am a little too busy to respond to and forget about, that I really need to be better as a person and try to help out people that want to get eventually into my shoes. And so that's what I love about him. And then from a professional standpoint, he's Doc Emmerich. You know, I've known him for 25 years. He used to be the play-by-play guy of the New Jersey Devils. And back at Continental Airlines Arena, the Meadowlands, where those games used to be played, we used to be sitting in the lower bowl in the stands. And I used to have the pleasure of, you know, I mean, again, we're in the lower bowl. This is how much revenue that the New Jersey Devils gave away.
Right.
And on the visitors' aisle, the visiting press's aisle was where the home broadcaster called the game from. So I used to sit there and have him in my ear the entire game. And if you remember back in the day, the New Jersey Devils weren't the most exciting team in the world. And yet, as you know, Doc can call frantic like nobody else in sports. And he used to make those games, these 2-1 Florida Panther, New Jersey Devil games sound just like the most exciting thing. And it was such a treat to be able to listen to him.
Well, very well said. Again, you know, I the respect level that I have for him and his ability to do what he did, and on top of that, the personal side of it all, couldn't have said it better myself. I've heard from plenty of young broadcasters that have experienced encounters with him, myself included. And when you're looking up to somebody like so many of us do, to see him go about his business the way he did, certainly. Just a thing of beauty from the on the air to off the air, and just to be as personable as he was.
My gut says that we'll see a lot more of Doc, probably, you know, maybe not in professional, but definitely at hockey rinks. And again, he's the type of person that will, I think, always be somebody that the NHL is going to lean on at a minimum for voiceovers and things like that. I hope that he'll continue to work in some capacity.
I'd like to spend a couple minutes going down some Minnesota Wild topics with you here as we chat with
Joe, if I can interrupt, one other little story that just popped in my head is last year during this – or 2 year – no, it was either last year or 2 years ago. I'm sitting at this bar at the Marriott in Pittsburgh, and the bartender there is a guy that's been there for absolutely ever. And I'm sitting with Pierre Maguire, so it must have been a game that's going to be on NBC the next night. And anyway, the bartender starts telling us how he and Doc Emmerich has struck up this really friendly relationship from all the years that he's stayed there, and that how every single time the Pittsburgh Penguins would be in the Stanley Cup final, dating back to the 2000s to even the last couple, that Doc Emmerich would always give this bartender, who I think his name was Mike, but I could be getting it wrong, always get him 2 tickets for he and his wife. And I just thought, like, you know, again,
wow.
And as you know, like, even Doc, I don't think just gets freebies for Stanley Cup final games. And just the fact that he used to always do that for this bartender in Pittsburgh, I just think says it all.
Yeah, incredible stuff. Got a couple minutes to chat this little while with me. Marco Rossi looks like an NHL player. Now I'm going off video feed from highlights to just when he was selected, body type, the size of his legs, his work ethic, what we've read about him, what you've written about him.
You know, I think the pandemic is actually going to put him in an incredible position to make the team. This is not your normal year. So let's just say the NHL really does start by January 1st. Training camp is going to be December 15th-ish. And so he's going to come back after they just assigned him today to the Zurich Lions, a little scoop view, but I hear that he is going to play Friday against Davos, make his Swiss League debut from that standpoint. And then if he comes back December 15th, well, World Juniors are going to be potentially going on, so the Wild are going to probably have to keep him from that. And then in early January, if he didn't make the team, there's no Ottawa 67s to reassign him to. Technically, right now, he's 19 years old, so he's technically not allowed to play for the Iowa Wild. Now, a little scoop for you here, too. I talked to Bill Daly the other day, and he said that he does believe that the OHL, that these Canadian junior leagues and the National Hockey League would amend the language to allow potential junior players to go play in the AHL, even if they're teenagers, which is not normally something they would allow. So we'll see. But right now, sure, the only option is to really send him back to Zurich, and then he'd be there for the rest of the year. So I just think that the smartest place for him to be is the Minnesota Wild. And so, you know, as long as he doesn't look completely out of place, and Billy Guerin and Dean Evason don't think that they're going to hurt his development by keeping him on the team, I think they're going to put him on the team. And again, if he looks like me on skates, obviously he's going to go and be assigned somewhere. But if he is somebody that can come ready to play and crack the lineup and actual play games, not just be in the press box or just practicing, I think that they'll put him on the team. So I think because of the situation that they find him in and the timing, I think that he's got a great opportunity to make the club.
Always breaking news with you, Russo. I love it. Bill Guerin has been on the job for, you know, just over a year now. He has made significant changes that he felt he needed to make. Some pundits probably agree, disagree, what have you, but I give him full marks for having the you-know-what to shake up a core that had been together for so long. Chuck Fletcher obviously drafted and signed a lot of those guys, probably harder for him to make moves. Paul Fenton, whatever you want to say, probably wasn't on the job long enough to be able to fully evaluate and make moves. Bill Guerin has come in and had the you-know-what to make some significant changes. How impressed, just from that standpoint, are you?
And I think he's continuing what Paul Fenton tried to do here before he lost his job, and that's break up the core of this team and throw a grenade in the locker room. Obviously, Paul traded Niederreiter, Granlund, and Coyle, and then the final piece of those four that were always together in the same breath was Jason Zucker, and that was Billy Guerin moving him in a really nice package, by the way, for a first-round pick. Alex Galchenyuk, who today signed with the Ottawa Senators, and Kalen Addison, who looks like a great prospect that Iowa Wild fans will probably get to get a glimpse on the next year or so. So I think that part is good. But then what he did is he did not wimp out from telling Mikko Koivu it was it, from trading Eric Staal, from trading Devin Dubnyk, and then creating more roster flexibility and cap space by putting a lot of guys on this team with 1-year deals. So, you know, this is a team in transition. I think next summer is going to be the most interesting thing to see who he re-signs and who he lets go and then who he brings in. But you're right. I think Wild fans have been waiting a long time for sort of new blood here, and he's trying to build through the draft. That's the one thing that Paul Fenton really did a good job on the last couple of years, was keeping his draft picks, drafting some really good players that Iowa Wild fans will get their eyes on here in the next year or two. And then Billy is going to continue that.
Your thoughts on Dean Evason?
I don't know when Bruce Boudreau got fired, if I thought he was going to have the interim tag taken off, but he did a really good job in that 12-game look. The team went 8-4. They looked like they were, after a really good trip out in California, looked like they were going to go on a little bit of a run to make the playoffs. And again, in a pandemic here, you know, in hindsight, it really makes sense to shed the interim tag, put him in a position to really take over this team. You give him a 1-year extension because he had 1 year left on his deal. And then what you do is you're giving him sort of a sneak peek to prove his worth. And if he proves his worth, he'll get re-signed. If not, then you go out in a year and a half and you go and you bring in a new coach. So, a lot of respect in that locker room, I think, by a lot of the players that have him. He has a really good relationship with especially some of the young kids on this team. You can just tell. And, assistant coaches have very different relationships with head coaches. It's just the way it is. The head coach has to be sort of the badass at times, where the assistant coach is more the nurturing, works more the one-on-one with people. I'm sure that from all the Iowa Wild players I talk to, you see that with a guy like Brett McLean, and it's one real reason why Brett McLean now will start his NHL coaching career. And so, that I think gave Dean a little bit of a head start to coach his team because the players on this team knew him.
Mikko Koivu has moved on. What stands out to you?
His loyalty to the logo. He bled Minnesota Wild, for lack of a better term. He was so loyal. He didn't want to go anywhere at the trade deadline because he couldn't envision himself playing for another team in the middle of the season. And he never cheated, too. He always wanted to play the game the right way. Sometimes that made him gruff and hard to be, not just from a beat writer standpoint to deal with, but also from a teammate standpoint. He was the hardest working guy in practice. And if you weren't working as hard, he would let you know it. And so that to me is what stands out. And now it's going to be very weird to walk into that locker room if we're ever allowed
allowed in the locker room again, to see a locker room without Mikko Koivu in there, because he, you know, his first day in training camp was my first day covering the team 15 years ago. And so he and I had a very interesting relationship, sometimes a love-hate relationship. But I knew that this was, that he was the face of the franchise, and now we'll see who the heir apparent is. Do they wait to name a captain? Do they hand it to a guy, to guys like Parisi or Suter? Do they extend Marcus Foligno and give it to him, or do they give it to the person that I think should get the captaincy? And that is Jared Spurgeon, who never got time, I believe, in Iowa. But, you know, if you were an Iowa Wild fan that watched the Houston Arrows, you had the pleasure of watching him very young in his career. Got to the Minnesota Wild on his 21st birthday, and he's really never left. And he's just an absolute leader on this team, and somebody that's also starting to let his personality shine during the pandemic, both in social media on Instagram, and also I've done two or three podcasts with him in the pandemic as well.
When you're driving to the rink, now this is pre-pandemic, and you know you've been hard on a player or the team the night before, what's that drive in and the walk through the bowels of Xcel Energy Center like? Because you know you're about to enter those doors after practice the next day.
It's something I've gotten used to. As I mentioned, I started essentially as a sports writer at age 15, and have been covering hockey forever. And it's something you get used to. It's just part of the job. But you know, to me, if I'm asking the players to be accountable, I have to be accountable. And that means if I blast the team after a bad loss or a player after a bad play, I need to show up the next day, walk in that locker room, and give that player the opportunity to talk to me. And not, essentially wimp out. And so it's not fun because you get to know these guys. You have relationships with them. There's nobody in that locker room that I don't respect as a human being. And I remember years and years and years ago, a player on the Minnesota Wild that I respect incredibly. I started shooting the breeze with him at practice the next day after ripping him for a bad play in the game. And he said to me, "Let me ask you a question. Like you just trashed me in the paper today. How do you come over here and just talk to me?" I said, "Because you know what? It's sort of a trick I play in my own brain. When I'm criticizing you as a player, I'm thinking you as a player, not you know, blank blank the human being, blank blank the father, blank blank the husband, blank blank the person that I genuinely like and respect. And it's just something that I have to do. But you know what? If I rip you, I promise you, tomorrow, if you score the game-winning goal in overtime, I'm going to absolutely laud you in print. And that's just the nature of the job. You have to take the good with the bad. And from that point on, I think that he and I had an even better relationship than we already had. And he got it. And, you know, the one thing I will say that makes things a lot tougher these days is it's a lot easier from my standpoint to cross the boundary. Because back in the day, you could only – if you ripped a player – it would only be in the newspaper. Now, if a player is angry with me, it's something I probably didn't even remember. I either said on a radio show, said on a podcast, tweeted, you know, a lot of times. I mean, that's where you get yourself into trouble these days. And so from my standpoint, sometimes you have to be much, much safer and much smarter than you used to be, because a lot of times quickly in a game, you're going to tweet something that might be absolutely inappropriate or even something you would never, ever put in The Athletic, and yet you had the audacity to tweet it. And so that's something that I'm still, even at my age and being a veteran hockey writer, I'm still getting used to. And that I, there have been plenty of times that I've had to go up to a player and say, "You know what, you're right. This was out of line. I apologize."
Interesting. You're right, with so many platforms and, you know, let's be honest, some of the players aren't subscribing to The Athletic, but they'll see your Twitter feed and be able to pick up on maybe what you said the night before. How did you get access to this 2021, what the NHL season might look like piece that you did about a week or so ago?
It took a ton of reporting, and I went to the league, and I basically said to people that I have relationships with at the league, I'm like, "Look, you know the way that things are in today's day and age. If I just write this without any access to Bill Daly, the deputy commissioner of the league, it's just going to become gospel. I might get that some things wrong. I get that Bill Daly can't tell me everything. But can I at least try to get this as accurate as possible? I just don't want this to be some fun tears of bubbles and this is what I'm hearing. I wanted to, you know, have some semblance of truth and so we could write this really well." And so that's what it came down to is luckily they trust me. I think that because of my longevity, there's some respect there, even though there's a lot of times I tick off the NHL. And so that's what it came down to, is I kind of threw myself at the mercy of them. As I said, look, this is what I have. This is what I'm writing. I have to write the story. I've been assigned to it. I sort of volunteered to do it. I enjoy, I've told you a gazillion times, Joe, I fancy myself as a reporter, not a writer. I love reporting stories, not exactly then following through and writing the story. I'm doing that right now. It's like I'm writing about Alex Hovanov, a guy that's having a lot of trouble right now in the KHL, getting in the lineup. And I've done all the reporting on it, and now I just got to sit and write the story, and I'm wound up dragging my feet, and I got to write this thing already. So it's like, you know, so with that story, it really was. It's like I built the shell, and then luckily, amazingly, the second the GM's meetings ended on Friday, Bill Daly gave me a phone call, and I talked to him for 20 minutes for the story, and he gave us a lot of honesty and candidness in there, and it made for what I hope is a good story that at least gives fans the ability to have some sense of what next season could look like, and not only fans but players. I mean, I can't tell you how many players texted me after. It's like, what are you like? Wow, like, you know. And the one thing that players are nervous about is their salaries. They thought that was all rectified in the collective bargaining agreement, and clearly what we're hearing right now is that's the next fight that's brewing between the league and the player association, is what are the players going to be paid next season if it's a shortened season in front of no fans.
I'm sure this will be a question that there'll be a lot of things to pop in your head, but if you can name just one story that when you broke it or you were about to break it, you were just, you couldn't wait to either get back to your desk to type it up on the laptop, or more recently tweet it out.
When I'm about to break a big story or a little story, it doesn't matter if it's Marco Rossi signing or Zach Parise and Ryan Suter signing, I get the same emotions through me. Like right when I'm tweeting it out, my fingers sort of like tingle, like like nervousness always. Especially in today's day and age where the satisfaction of breaking a story lasts like 1 second, because the second you tweet it out, everybody else has it, where it's not like the old days. If you scoop somebody, they had to live with it for an entire 24 hours till the next day's newspaper. But the one that still always, when somebody asks me that type of question, is the Parise Suter scoop that I had. It was old school reporting where I had to get out of my house. Trust me, I was working on it for 4 days. I was sitting in front of my Twitter account in 2012. I didn't know what to believe anymore. Even though I felt like I had a good grasp of what's happening, you're seeing so much stuff thrown against the walls from insiders to quote unquote fake insiders that you start to like wonder what the heck's real anymore. And I decided, you know what, I got to step away from the Twitter account and actually do some old school reporting. And I went to the Minneapolis airport and I watched Zach Parise get off the plane, and I got an exclusive interview with him. And then I went and got a lot of tips that day that Mike Yeo and Craig Leopold and Chuck Fletcher were flying to Madison to meet with Ryan Suter and Neil Sheehy, Ryan Suter's agent. And I went to the St. Paul airport. I watched that plane landed because I wanted to see with my own eyes that they got off that plane. And so I remember speeding home and writing the story that the Wild were going to sign them. And if you remember, the signing happened on July 4th in the morning. We had a huge story in the Star Tribune, but we live were reporting that it was going to happen. And it was the hottest day in like history on July 4th, over 100 degrees. And right when I'm about to publish the story on the Star Tribune and tweet out the link, the power in my building went off. Yeah, it was unbelievable. It was harrowing.
What?
And I remember fumbling through my book bag to try to find this jetpack, this Verizon jetpack that the Star Tribune gave me for this case, if this ever happened, essentially if I needed to break a story from an airport and couldn't get Wi-Fi, or we were in a press box and the Wi-Fi didn't work. And I'm trying to put this on, and I'm going and trying to figure out, like, how do I put in the IP or whatever it's called into my Wi-Fi and hook it up. And it was the scariest, like, 5 minutes of my entire life. And finally, we were able to break the story. That Parise, that first, the way it worked is that I had it confirmed that Suter signed, but that Parise had his contract but hadn't faxed it back yet. So we actually had to do it in almost two shifts. Is right first a Suter signed story, but that Parise was in the works, and then like 10 minutes later that Parise signed too. And it's still probably my biggest pride that I've done, because it was, you know, it was one of those things where everybody was just saying that the Minnesota Wild were out on it, and I was like the only one that knew that no. Because I wasn't tweeting, you know, that's the problem with today's day and age, is that when you're reporting a story, writers today, Joe, just like live tweet their reporting. And you know, it's not like in the old days you had to report a story out fully and then you present that to the reader a full story. Now it's like, you know, every second you're like, this team's out, that team's out. Remember last year with the John Tavares signing and it's like, you know, Tampa's out, yeah. This team's out, the Islanders and Toronto are the two teams, you know, like, and that's what was happening during the whole Parisi Suter thing, is that all these other writers and insiders kept on saying Minnesota was out. And I'm like, well, I don't think that Zach Parise's flying back to Minnesota to announce he's not signing with the Wild. A lot of times it's reporter instinct too. And, you know, you trust your gut, you trust your sources. And I know that's a long answer to what you asked. In Florida, pre-social media, you know, I broke a ton of stories, coaches hirings, coaches firings, Pavel Bure traded there, you know, things like that. And so those things also stick in my mind. But in today's day and age, I think a lot of writers just figure in today's social media world, why even try to work hard to break a story? Because the second that you announce it or your competition announces it, you know, everybody's going to have it anyway, so they don't even try. Where I'm still sort of that old school person that tries to break news and have stories ready to go in case stuff happens.
Michael Russo at Russo Hockey on Twitter. He's presented by Fleet Farm. Fleet Farm is your hunting destination. Find everything you need from ice and gas to gear and snacks. You can even pick up your hunting license. Check out their huge selection and top hunting brands. Fleet Farm, your one-stop shop. Michael, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
This was a lot of fun, and hope we could do it again soon.
All right, my thanks to Michael Russo from The Athletic Minnesota for joining me here on 101 with Joe O'Donnell, presented by Explore Minnesota. Again, Michael Russo today, courtesy of Fleet Farm. That's going to do it for episode number 6. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Again, the AHL new tentative start date, February 5th. Be back in a week or so with the next episode. Hope you enjoyed it. Till then, stow your tray tables in an upright lock position. This podcast episode is coming in for a landing. See you in a week or so. 101 with Joe O'Donnell.